HOPEX really giving some hope, for lack of a better term, to the Trump campaign. She testified today. And let me just say, Alvin Bragg is not getting what he wants out of this lady. Welcome back to the program, everyone. I am Trish Regan. This is the Trish Regan Show. We're going to talk all about that, because now even the mainstream media might just have to admit that this whole case is just, a little over the top. We're going to get into that. We're going to talk about all the hacks that are in the White House right now, from Joe Biden himself to the guy who's in charge of his economic policy. You want to know why this economy is bad? Because Joe doesn't know what he's doing, and nobody around him has any clue what they're doing. That is absolutely, absolutely for sure. I've got some proof. And, they're so desperate. I mean, you want to talk about hacks. They're actually bringing Luke Skywalker into the White House press briefing room now. I mean, KJP, we know that, you're on thin ice, but now you got to get Mark Hamill in on the act. We will talk about that and the lousy jobs report that was out today. Hello again. Welcome. This is a live edition of the show, so please make sure, if you have not, make sure that you subscribe to this show. It is really important right now. I want you to subscribe. I want you to like. I want you to do all those great things. And we begin at this moment on Hope Hicks. Hope Hicks. Really giving Donald Trump, if you ask me, a little bit of hope that maybe some of this, will really get called out. So she testified today. This is the former assistant of Donald Trump. Really striking, beautiful woman. She actually broke down on the stand, started crying, and got clearly very, very emotional. She said that she needed to take a break. She was there. She defended the president's relationship with his wife, Melania. Talked about how important it was for him because he was really, didn't want his family to hear all this nasty stuff that was coming out. Because when you run for president, they're going to go after you with everything they got. Heck, I mean, he even went after Ted Cruz with the whole your dad killed Kennedy thing. So just saying, anything can be out there. And what she admitted was when this Access Hollywood tape thing came out, it was pretty upsetting. It was upsetting to the inner circle around Trump. He knew it would be upsetting for Melania to hear any of this. And so there was a personal component of that involved too. I want to go to a clip from MSNBC because they were reporting on this today, and they reported on that sort of emotional breakdown that she had when she was there on the witness stand. I can tell you, she's a lovely woman. I know her. She is tremendously loyal to Donald Trump. So I'm sure she kind of got put in this situation. All of a sudden, now she's going to be on the stand. For what? For a case that really doesn't add up and doesn't make any sense, because I'm sorry, look, NDAs, whether you like them or not, are actually legal. I don't think it's seemly. I don't like the catch and kill thing. Hey, but you know what? It's totally legal. And by the way, the other side, don't kid yourself. They're doing it all the time and they're spreading rumors themselves, and they put them in the New York Times. Thank you very much. But it's okay for one side to do it, not the other. Here's MSNBC talking about Hope Hicks just moments ago.
Colangelo saying, can you describe the conversation? And Hope Hicks saying this. It was the day after Michael told the New York Times saying he made a payment without Trump's knowledge, and that Trump said he spoke to Michael and Michael had paid this woman to protect him from a false allegation, and Michael had done it to protect him and had not told him anything about it. I had known Cohen for 3.5 years. I did not know Michael to be an especially charitable person. He is the kind of person who takes credit. Trump thought it was generous of him to do, and he appreciated the loyalty. And then Hicks goes on to say, Michael felt like it was his job to protect him. Again, that would be out of character for Michael, Hope Hicks says. I don't know Michael to be an especially charitable person. He wanted to know how it was playing out in the media. This is kind of part of what has been going on throughout the day, Alex, which has been an incredibly interesting testimony, I have to say, from Hope Hicks, with about just 45 minutes left in court because they are going to go into recess at 3:45. Hope Hicks has really been connecting the dots, right? Every single person we have heard on the stand so far throughout this trial, whether it's Rona Graff, whether it's David Pecker, Hope Hicks has been somewhat of connecting those dots. She was even asked the questions of, Who is Alan Weisselberg? What did Alan Weisselberg do in the Trump organization? What did Rona Graff do? Where did Rona Graff, in fact, sit? How close was she to the former president? Dating back, of course, thinking back, of course, to Rona Graff's testimony about the fact that she knew Stormy Daniels had visited Trump Tower. She had inserted Karen McDougal's address along with phone number into the former president's phone log.
So interesting color there, if you would. I mean, clearly Hope Hicks is a great assistant. Right? She knew everything that was going on and was apparently that Rona, who had been his assistant for many years, may not have even known. So Hope had a lot of insight into things and was kind of running the show. She apparently was concerned that when, you know, the first tape came out, the Access Hollywood one came out, she went to Michael Cohen, who you heard, I mean, that is not a good sign for his character witness. I mean, they're pinning their whole case on this guy. And here's this beautiful young woman who, by the way, is extremely sympathetic. She's soft-spoken, breaks down, crying. She said in the beginning how nervous she was. I'm sure she was. Again, like, you know, these are not necessarily things that you anticipate. Like, she got thrown into all of this. I do think she likes the president tremendously and believed in him and is very loyal to him and is making the point that, you know, Michael Cohen wasn't really that loyal. So I don't know exactly where they're going to take this. Again, like, I'm really troubled with sort of the whole, okay, you can't do this, that somehow this is illegal because Michael Cohen was making some kind of contribution to the campaign. I mean, if he was the fixer guy and you got a public personality, I'm just saying, right? Like, let's talk Hollywood for a second. I mean, things apparently happen in Hollywood all the time, but I'm still waiting on the rapper guy, right? Like, whatever happened with all of that? Thank you very much. So things happen all the time, and there's this whole catch and kill thing that goes on. Ooh, David Pecker explained all of that. So Michael was maybe that kind of guy that was like the fixer that was doing all of this, and you're going to have a hard time. Like, you've got to somehow prove how this was fraudulent. They're saying there's 34 counts against him, falsifying internal Trump organization business records stemming from paperwork such as invoices and checks that were deemed legal expenses in Trump organization records. Prosecutors say they were really just reimbursements to Cohen for $130,000. Well, again, let me go back to who is Michael Cohen? You heard from Hope Hicks there that the jury did anyway. He's kind of a lousy dude and has always been kind of a lousy dude. Meanwhile, he like flips his story just depending on what's going on, right? And now even CNN is calling into question the character of Michael Cohen. I mean, if you don't have a decent witness in this whole thing, where are you going with it? Heck, even Michael Avenatti is calling up from prison into MSNBC, stunning them, saying, you know what? There's not much of a case here. It could have maybe happened a couple of years ago, but they waited too long. They really don't have a case. So where's this heading? I want to play this for you. Jake Tapper, you know, the CNN guy, you probably don't know, but a guy on CNN who tends to be far more left than he is right. Let's just put it that way. So this anchor over on CNN has just been like an attack dog going after Trump over and over and over again. And now all of a sudden today, as all this comes out, as Hope Hicks breaks down there on the stand while giving her testimony, says Michael Cohen's basically not a nice guy. So again, jury, are you really going to go with Alvin Bragg given that his star witness happens to be Michael Cohen? And Jake Tapper suddenly like gets hit with an epiphany, which is, gee, you know, why does Michael Cohen get to say all this bad stuff about Trump, but, you know, Trump can't talk badly about Michael Cohen? Maybe we should reconsider that or rethink that, et cetera. This is a big deal, guys, because this is a CNN, and we know where they stand, anchor now coming out saying something that, well, if you ask me, sounds a lot more, how shall we say, positive than what we would typically hear, right, from CNN vis-a-vis Trump. I want to play this for you right now. This is from just a short time ago, and you see Jake Tapper here on CNN singing a different tune.
you're a voter, okay, and you're hearing this stuff, it might actually be just like a fundamental issue of fairness. That doesn't seem fair that Donald Trump's not allowed to criticize him when he's constantly throwing punches at him.
Well, the voters that we talk to obviously don't really care about this case. I mean, I cover Donald Trump and I go to his rallies, so no one there is.
By the way, that's true. But do you see how she completely turned that? Let's go back and listen again. He actually makes a really interesting and important point. She completely ignores it. She's not willing to go there. Listen again.
You're a voter, okay, and you're hearing this stuff. It might actually be just like a fundamental issue of fairness. That doesn't seem fair that Donald Trump's not allowed to criticize him when he's constantly throwing punches at him.
Well, the voters that we talk to obviously don't really care about this case. I mean, I cover Donald Trump and I go to his rallies, so no one there is.
She's kind of putting down voters who like Trump. I mean, it's relevant in that, yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, voters who like Trump, they're like, enough already, okay? We're sick of it. 94 counts and counting, guys. I mean, heck, the Michigan Police Union, with his 94 indictments against him, including 4 criminal counts, they endorsed him as their candidate. In other words, a lot of people don't care about this. But the fact that you're absolutely ignoring, and a valid point, like, Jake, I'll hand it to you. You know, once in a while. And like, she won't even entertain it because she's just not going to go there. They're not going to go there. The media cannot ever, ever allow themselves to go there. Remember that.
You know, up in arms.
Do they even know he's on trial?
They do know he's on trial, but they think it's unfair. And I will tell you that this case going first, one of the interesting conversations I had with someone who worked for the Trump administration was very close to Donald Trump, actually no longer has any ties with him, told me that this case going first made him want to put a MAGA flag in his front yard because he felt like it was unfair. And that's really the sentiment when you go to these rallies that they...
Yeah, well, it is unfair because I'm not sure it's entirely legal. Therefore, it would be unfair. I mean, I actually was really offended, ladies and gentlemen, by Letitia James in her case. Letitia James trying to actually charge him $500 million. Think about that. I mean, $175 million, that was pretty egregious. And she wouldn't even take the bond, right? Remember that one? That was unbelievable. Finally, the judge said, hey, girl, you got to actually take this thing. It's incredible. I mean, that case blew me away. But, you know, I'm a business reporter. I've been a business reporter my whole career. And so I'm looking at that going, well, wait a second. Where are the damages? Like, how is the punishment for that alleged crime in any way at all in line with what was alleged? I mean, it's not, okay? It's absolutely positively not. And so I think this is pretty crazy. You got him tied up for 4 out of 5 days? He can't even campaign? Come on. That sounds like election interference to me. What do you think? Let me know in the comments. This is a live show, so I'm reading all your comments as they come in. And you know your job, right? You have to make sure that you tell me if the audio's out, because Drew is back on Monday, but it's yours truly in the hot seat running the control room. I have wonderful producers, but for some reason, it's just me and it's just Drew who can run the live controls. So I'm counting on you all to tell me if there's anything amiss. I think it's incredible that we're in this kind of state. It's sad that we're in this kind of state. Is it not? Where everything's been reduced to literally just teams and sides, and they're out to get him no matter what. That's what Letitia James is doing. That is what Alvin Bragg is doing. Now they're just tying him up and making anybody who had anything ever to do with him or worked for him, making their lives absolutely miserable. So I think half the country's looking at this saying, enough already. No, they don't believe it. Of course they don't believe it. And I don't think you're going to convince them otherwise. At this point, it's kind of like, you know, the little boy who cried wolf. You keep telling us, oh my gosh, he's going to destroy. He's going to destroy democracy. How many times have we heard that? You know, I'm going to lose my job. That was Nicole Wallace the other day, the MSNBC lady. Pathetic. Utterly pathetic. I think we all agree if she loses her job, it's because she just stinks at her job. I guarantee you she would not be able to hang here on YouTube. Not with all of you. We're up to 275,000 and counting. Thank you for that. Thank you. I love it. And so many of you are team members as well. So you're helping to support this show and support this channel. So thank you. I see you here too. David and Leslie and Hightower, Ian, like all the peeps are here and in the room. So thanks for all that you do. It really matters. And I've said this before, you know, I say, well, you know, she wouldn't be able to hang on YouTube. The reality is you actually have to have a little personality. You actually have to have a little knowledge and you have to have a viewpoint. Right? Over here, it's completely different. There's no scripts. There's no bells and whistles. Hopefully there's audio, but it's a very different kind of feel overall. And I think that's a good thing. I mean, this really, to me, is the future. This is the future of communication. And it gets me really excited. I mean, I tell people all the time, I'm just sort of amazed by how quickly all this technology is changing. We've made some changes, by the way, in the studio. I hope you like it. I do still have paint smells in the room. You guys, we've been joking about that because they're painting. I have a little office over there to the side and they're painting over there. And I'm like, eh. So anyway, a little too much information perhaps on this Friday, but I just wanted to remind you to subscribe and to thank you for all your support. I love having all these team members here on the show. All right, I want to tell you, this team in the White House, this team is absolutely a bunch of hacks, total hacks, partisan hacks. They cannot do their job. I mean, this woman, KJP, Karine Jean-Pierre, we know she can't do her job. In fact, she can't do her job, and yet they can't get rid of her. You know, she checks a few too many boxes. That would not be pleasant, now would it? For the Biden administration to say, see ya, KJP, when she is the first gay African-American woman to hold the position as spokesperson. So apparently they've been trying, like, since last fall to get rid of her. It hasn't quite panned out. And so now they're getting an unexpected visitor at the press briefing today. She brought in her friend, her pal, actually the president's friend and pal, because he's desperate. He's desperate. So it was like show and tell. Let's bring a friend to school on Friday. And today they brought Luke Skywalker, Mark Hamill, the actor, to tell you and all the media how absolutely, positively wonderful Joe Biden and his economy are. On a day when we got a lousy jobs report, of course. Here he is. You might as well watch. We're going to pick it apart.
There's no introduction that really is needed here. I have a special guest, as you can see. Mark Hamill has decided to join us on this wonderful Friday, and I am really excited to turn it over to Mr. Hamill. Here we go.
How many of you had Mark Hamill lead the press briefing on your bingo card? Hands? Yeah, me either. And look, I just got to meet the president, and he gave me these aviator glasses. Oh, yeah. I love the merch. Love it all. But listen, I just wanted to say I was honored to be asked to come to the White House to meet the president, the most legislatively successful president in my lifetime. And, you know, I don't have to go through the list, the bipartisan infrastructure law, the PACT Act, the CHIPS Act, all of that, inflation, 15 million jobs. Look, it's all good. I mean, I was really thrilled to meet the entire staff, because you know it's not just one person. It's like a composite endeavor. And all these people, my goodness, you know, I mean, I have no idea. I had no idea just what went into what is on his plate on a daily basis. So that's pretty much it. I'm open to questions, although no Star Wars questions, please. But I want to say once again how grateful I am, and it just shows you that one person can be so influential and so positive in our lives. And again, thank you so much. And Peter Baker, I loved your book. Yes.
Wow. Thank you, Mark Hamill, for being here. What did you ask? What did you talk about?
We love you.
First of all, I only expected to be there for like 5 minutes. He showed us all these photographs, and, you know, it was really amazing to me, because, you know, I was invited to the Carter White House, and I came, And then I came to the Obama White House, but I never was invited into the Oval Office, and it was a large gathering. So this one was really extra special.
All right, sir.
My gosh.
Can I bring up Star Wars too, sir?
Well, you know, I called him Mr. President. He said, you can call me Joe. And I said, can I call you Obi-Wan Kenobi? He liked that. But listen, I'm not really here to dominate. I have to turn it back over to our wonderful press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre. So thank you all so much.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Oh, my gosh. Seriously? That was for real. I see in your comments, someone's like, oh, was that a joke? David, one of our producers here on the Trish Regan Show, he and I were saying the same thing. He's like, is this a joke? Like, what the heck? On a day when you got a lousy jobs report, you see Karine didn't want to have to talk about the jobs report. She didn't want to say or explain why we're seeing putrid growth in jobs, only 175,000 being added in the last month, right? Like, we're not growing, okay? We got major stagflation. So her answer is to bring in for show and tell Luke Skywalker, who then is working his Star Wars thing. Star Wars owned by ABC, of course, George Lucas Films. You know where they come from. They're all coming from the left side of the aisle. Anyway, that was just unbelievable to me. So I'm like, okay, they're totally hacks. They are out there on a day when you have some really important but bad economic news, and she doesn't want to have to deliver it. So she figures she can, like, I don't know, distract with the likes of a has-been actor. That's my takeaway. I know you guys are just horrified. It was pathetic. Yeah, and Joe Obi-Wan Kenobi. I mean, don't even get me. I'm not really into Star Wars anyway. Sorry for all those that are. They are hacks in this administration. That's the reality of all of it. They don't know what they're doing. Remember Jennifer Granholm? I've played you that sound before. She was asked by a guy I used to work with over at Bloomberg, really talented reporter named Tom Keene, on their morning show. So what is your Granholm plan to bring down energy prices? And she laughed like a hyena and said, oh, well, you know, I can't actually bring down energy prices. It's an OPEC thing, and they're OPEC, blah, blah, blah. No, lady, you know what? Actually, you could have a really big effect on energy prices by just allowing drilling here in the U.S., right? I mean, it's amazing to me. I mean, they are such hacks. They have a woman, Jennifer Granholm, who's clueless. She was the governor of Michigan for a brief second, and then another brief second was, here you go. That's how you know she's really bad, an MSNBC anchor. Mm-hmm. So the MSNBC anchor suddenly becomes our energy secretary. That's a big gig. You know what else is a really big gig? Whoever's running the economic policy for the United States of America. That's kind of a big deal. Typically, you have really strong economists in seats like that. You know, I'm thinking back to the days of when, like, a Larry Summers would be head of the National Economic Council Advisors. Or maybe you have Alan Greenspan. I mean, we're talking people, right, that have real bona fide credentials in the field of economics. And then there's this guy. Wait till you see this. When I say that this administration is filled with hacks, don't doubt me. There are a bunch of political hacks, social workers, etc., wannabe anchors, like KJP, who was a Fox News contributor, and Jennifer Granholm, who briefly had a show on MSNBC. These are the people that are now controlling economic policy, international policy. I mean, sure, Blinken actually has had a career working for the State Department, but he's been wrong on everything, like forever, so much as so that John McCain, like 10 years ago, had to call him out and say, oh my God, like, I can't believe this guy's going to be undersecretary for state for Obama. I have to vote against him because he's been wrong on everything and he's actually going to risk American lives. That's now your Secretary of State, ladies and gentlemen, under Joe Biden. And this is the guy in charge of economic policy. You need to see this because he has no clue absolutely no clue how the economy works. This one just is unbelievable. Look, it's kind of painful to watch. We're going to talk about it. But watch it. Stay glued to every word here. This is a new documentary that's coming out. And Jared Bernstein makes an appearance. Oh, now I really miss Drew. I really miss Drew. We're going to make sure we find a way to get this in here for you because I have to show you this clip. Truly unbelievable, horrible stuff. Okay, I got it right here on my computer, and we're going to find a way to do this because I got to show you. Unbelievable. Here we go.
The U.S. government can't go bankrupt because we can print our own money.
It obviously begs the question, why exactly are we borrowing in a currency that we print ourselves? I'm waiting for someone to stand up and say, why do we borrow our own currency in the first place?
Like you said, they print the dollar. So why does the government even borrow?
Well, some of this stuff gets... some of the language and concepts are just confusing. I mean, the government definitely prints money, and it definitely lends that money, which is why the government definitely prints money, and then it lends that money by selling bonds. Is that what they do? They sell bonds. Yeah, they sell bonds, right? Since they sell bonds, and people buy the bonds and lend them the money. Yeah, so... A lot of times, at least to my ear with MMT, the language and the concepts can be kind of unnecessarily confusing, but there is no question that the government prints money and then it uses that money to... I guess I can't really talk, I don't get it. I don't know what they're talking about, because it's like... The government clearly prints money. It does it all the time, and it clearly borrows. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this debt and deficit conversation. So I don't think there's anything confusing there.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, this is who is in charge of our economic policy? I mean, I knew he was kind of not so swift. I've interviewed him and talked to him many times over the years. Nice enough guy, says the most stupid thing always and doesn't seem to understand the intricacies of economic policy, but I had no idea it was this bad. I had no idea. So just for the record, yeah, the U.S. prints all kinds of money. You know, we're like going wild with our printing press, especially lately. That's the Federal Reserve, thank you very much. And then, you know, it gets compounded by the fact that Joe Biden thinks he can hand out a third stimulus check and Chuck Schumer wants to pass all kinds of trillions of dollars worth of spending. Nobody has any discipline whatsoever. But yeah, they're spending. And yes, we're borrowing because you see we're issuing all these promissory notes effectively, right? We keep printing money and then it has to be worth something. So, okay, so we're going to sell it there on the open market. China buys them. And at some point, you know, China may not buy them, but right now we're still getting our treasury bonds bought. And as a result, people are realizing very quickly that the U.S. currency, the dollar, might one day have a problem. I mean, not necessarily now, because we're still the prettiest girl at a really not-so-hot dance, right? I mean, do you want to invest in U.S. dollars or do you want to invest in the Chinese yuan? I'll take U.S. dollars, thank you very much. And I think most people would agree with that. But, you know, at some point, when you keep acting like an emerging market country like we are acting, you're going to have to pay some consequences. It's one of the reasons why I like gold. And we're going to talk about that in just a second. But first, still, back to Bernstein. I mean, this guy, listen to this. Okay. According to his Wikipedia page, he has a degree in music from Manhattan School of Music. It's conservatory. An okay conservatory. I attended New England Conservatory. It's better. Juilliard's better too. And then he went on to get a Master of Social Work from Hunter College, as well as a social welfare degree from Columbia University's School of Social Work. Oh my gosh, you guys, we have a social worker in charge of economic policy who can't explain what it means to have a treasury market or a printing press, courtesy of the Federal Reserve. That's how bad Joe Biden's administration is. Hacks. They're all a bunch of hacks. And they're manipulating and playing with your future and your money. And it's just so fundamentally wrong. And you know what? Don't take my word for it. Just look at the numbers. Look at where our economy is. We've hit stagflation, baby. I told you we would. I said it would be Carter 2.0. It's worse than that. And now we got this high inflation and no growth. And this guy can't even explain how the system works. I mean, wow. It's really pathetic. I told you it's one of the reasons why I like gold, and it is. I mean, I think gold should be part of any well-diversified portfolio. I've always thought that, in good times and in bad. It's one of those sort of consistent things that even in my own life, I feel is very important for myself and my family. And, I'm not your financial advisor, but even at 76 Research, 76research.com, my company that I co-founded with a brilliant, brilliant investor, Rob Horton, we when we talk about things like having that sort of safety in your portfolio, it's one of the things that comes up. I mean, gold is just part of that. And so I'm really, really happy to tell you about a new partnership, a sponsor here on this program, American Hartford Gold. I mean, they are just a really, really terrific company, you guys. I am so happy to bring them on board. You know, this is something that you know I care so much about. I want to make sure that everybody is able to provide for themselves in the future. And again, having a well-diversified portfolio means looking at things like gold. And this is a terrific company. You know, I have been talking to the CEO over the last month or so, and he's going to be on the show actually next week. He's just great. Just great. Max Baker. This is a company that has a 5-star rating, thousands of reviews, A+ from the Better Business Bureau. And one of the things that I really liked when we started talking was this. You see it on the screen. They're willing to offer you up to $15,000 in free silver. I'm like, seriously? Wow. So I liked the sound of that. And, I think they're a great group. And I encourage you, if you're interested in investing in gold, and maybe you want a little silver along the way, right? Up to $15,000 free silver. You should text them. You see the number on the screen. You can text my name, Trish, to 65532. Again, it's Trish to 65532. Or you can call them at 1-844-495-1115. I'm just trying to type this into our little chat so that you guys can see it. Let's see if I can do this. Because, If you're interested in investing in gold, you might as well entertain the idea of the $15,000, up to $15,000 in free silver. So again, you can text, look at this, Trish is texting it right now. Text Trish to 65532. There we go. You know what, Randy, I hear you. I'm just looking in the chat here. Last audit of the gold was Fort Knox, 1972. Look, I mean, we're not going to go back to the gold standard, but, you know, sometimes it's kind of entertaining to think about because we need some discipline. We need some discipline, baby. I mean, this is out of control when you got people like this.
The U.S. government can't go bankrupt because we can print our own money.
It obviously begs the question, why exactly are we borrowing in a currency that we print ourselves? I'm waiting for someone to stand up and say, why do we borrow our own currency in the first place?
Like you said, they print the dollars.
I have to watch it again.
Why
sorry.
Why does the government even borrow?
Well, some of this stuff gets... some of the language and concepts are just confusing. I mean, the government definitely prints money. And it definitely lends that money.
Confusing to you.
The government definitely prints money, and then it lends that money by selling bonds. Is that what they do? They sell bonds. Yeah, they sell bonds, right? Since they sell bonds and people buy the bonds and lend them the money. Yeah, so a lot of times, at least to my ear with MMT, the language and the concepts can be kind of unnecessarily confusing, but there is no question that the government prints money and then it uses that money to... I don't get it. The government clearly prints money. It does it all the time, and it clearly borrows. Otherwise,
okay. I'm sorry. We can't watch this anymore. This guy is just too painful, right? I mean, but he's a music major. I got nothing against music majors. Hey, Alan Greenspan was a music major. He was a jazz, I think, musician, saxophone, I believe so. And he was really into that and had a whole like sort of life as a musician before he ever got into economics. Yours truly has a long background in music. I studied opera. I could play piano before I could even, like, I could read music before I could actually read. Like, I only knew A, B, C, D, E, F, G, because that's all you have on the piano. But, you know, it was enough to get by. I mean, I think that there's obviously, you know, some great things about music, and it can lend itself very well to the study of economics. But you know what? I studied a lot of economics in school. I then worked at Goldman Sachs. I mean, I'm more qualified to be running economic policy than the guy who's running it in the Biden administration. For sure. Full stop. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I am getting kind of animated today. I just am so disgusted at these people. I really am. I cannot believe that this is who we have in charge. But it is what it is. And consequently, we're left with really bad news about our economy today. 175,000 jobs added. You know, you can't find this anywhere. Like, I'm looking for the bad headlines all over the media today. I don't see them. No, they're trying to spin it like, oh, it's good news. It's good news because now the Fed will definitely have to cut, thereby leading to even more inflation, which will be more problematic down the road. Here we go. New York Times. The Fed just got the hiring slowdown it wanted. Will it cut rates soon? So this is the spin that you're seeing. I saw it in AP as well. Wage growth and hiring slowed in April, prodding investors to slightly increase their bet on rate cuts this year. They all want a rate cut. I get it. You know what? Like, keep the sugar high going, right? Until the party ends, and it won't be pretty. 175,000 jobs added in April. Look at it. It's in orange on the screen. You compare it to where we were. I mean, we were upwards of 300,000. Let me just put it in perspective. 10 years ago, actually, longer, 12 years ago, I remember doing a story on how you needed at least 300,000 jobs each month with the economy. You need to add 300,000 jobs just to keep pace with the population growth. Well, given that we know our population growth has been like exploding at the seams here with all of our new people arriving, undocumented, the illegals coming at what, 8 million just since this year, at least. You need a lot more than 175,000 jobs. You need a lot more than 300,000 jobs in order to keep pace with it. We're not keeping pace with it. Nothing is working right now. We do have stagflation. And so you got to be really smart about how you're investing. It's a big part of why I started 76 Research with my very good friend, Rob Horton, who has had a legendary career on Wall Street, worked decades on Wall Street, and just is a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant stock picker. And I said, you know, so many people are asking me all the time, and I'm very macro oriented. And occasionally I give you guys, on the show, I try not to do it too much on the show. It's more within the research itself. And Rob is so steeped in the numbers. So we go over this together. And I tend to be like, historically, I've always been really pretty spot on in terms of these overall macro trends. And he's been spot on in terms of his stock picks. And so we paired up to start 76research.com with the idea that, you know, not all the research needs to go to boutique, right? Like there's a whole industry of boutique research, very, very expensive research, and it gets sent to other sort of Wall Street institutions. And I thought, you know, what if you could actually do this and give outstanding quality research from, you know, somebody like Rob, who's just incredible, and we could bring it direct to people as opposed to, you know, somebody reading it from on high and like filtering it down to you. So that was the goal here. This is what we're doing. It is stellar stuff. I mean that. I would not have a company that was anything less than outstanding when it comes to your money. So take a look at 76research.com. You can sign up for the 76 report. A lot of interesting ideas in there for investors, or you can get one of the model portfolios, which is where the action is. 10 to 15 stock picks. I just talked to Rob this morning. He's got the new sort of report coming out for all of them right now. So he's in the midst of that. There is a portfolio for those that are concerned about inflation. Obviously, you should be a portfolio for people who want to make sure that they have some income, right, that you can generate some income off of your portfolio. And there's also a portfolio that is exclusive to sort of growth, but with the idea that, you know, you're in it for a while. Like, I don't believe in sort of in and out, although I will say that one of our picks that we came out with, one of the very first ones, while the market's been down like 0.2%, guess what? That one was up nearly 14%. So, hey, a little shameless plug, if we could. But as we talk about the Federal Reserve and how screwed up they are, I played the soundbite for you the other day. I want to show it to you again, and we have new people in the audience. You guys have to see this. You know, RFK, I know he has a little bit of a lefty sort of socialist thing going on, but he's right on this one. Listen to what he's, well, I mean, he's calling the Fed like basically a criminal organization. Not basically. I mean, he actually says it. You got to watch this. This is incredible. Take a peek.
The middle class, after World War II, became the greatest economic engine in the history of mankind. And a large part of that, you know, of course, we had destroyed the industrial base of Europe and we owned everything. But also, we spent that money wisely in making sure every veteran got into a house. Every member of that generation basically was able to own a home, and you had this ferment of entrepreneurial energy, what Franklin Roosevelt called America's industrial genius, that was released. And, you know, when I was in 1960, when I was a kid, we owned half the wealth on the face of the earth. And it wasn't owned by an oligarchy. It was owned by the American middle class. And, you know, we've adopted a lot of policies, and particularly the way the Fed is operated, which is, a criminal agency, right? It's just a vacuum cleaner for Wall Street to shift wealth upward to this, you know, to this kleptocracy. And it's a captured agency. You know, they're all captured, right?
Wow. RFK, not holding back. The Fed is a criminal agency. Oh my gosh. So a really explosive commentary from him. But look at what they've done. I mean, they've kind of robbed us all. They've robbed you of your dollars, of your earnings. So that's what he's getting at, because they're destroying the dollar with all of their money printing, and they're turning us into quite literally a banana republic. I mean, we're lucky. We're still the world's hegemonic power, right? Everybody still kowtows to us. And they probably will for the foreseeable future. But when you go out some ways, I mean, none of these politicians care enough about the future generations. What about your kids and your grandkids? What's going to be left for them? I mean, I used to joke that we were going to become France. We'd be lucky to be France, frankly. I mean, we're looking way more like Venezuela, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not kidding. And this is why you need the right people. You don't want the Jared Bernsteins with their music and social welfare degrees running your economy. You don't want the former MSNBC anchor who doesn't understand OPEC or energy markets in charge of your energy policy. You don't want these people. You want good people with actual backgrounds in business and economics that understand this stuff running the show, which is why I want to give a shout out for my friends, one of our great sponsors here on the program. I'm so excited to partner with them, AFP, Americans for Prosperity. You can sign up and take a look at what they're doing right here at this URL. Prosperity is possible, because it is. It is. We need to believe in that, right? We need to believe in something. We need to hold on to what has historically made us the tremendous economy and country that we are. The United States of America is the envy of the world because prosperity is possible here. Prosperity is not possible in a whole lot of other places all around the world, which is why, by the way, they're all coming here. So let's protect what we have. Let's put the right people who have a few brain cells in their head in charge, go to Prosperity Is Possible. Sign up, see what they're doing. All really, really terrific stuff. I mean, I just can't tell you. I'm going to sound like one of the MSNBC people, but I can't tell you how much is at stake. I mean, at risk of sounding a little over the top, it's your future. It's your kids' future. It's your money. It's your success. It's your health. It's everything. I mean, we're going to get dragged into who knows what if the current team stays in place. We're already being dragged into things that we have no business being dragged into. If we had a smarter team at the State Department, if we had people that actually knew how to negotiate, knew how to use financial tools like tariffs aggressively, acutely, then we might not be in the mess we are in. But again, you got no one who knows their... I won't say what I was thinking. Let's just say you have no one in there who has a clue. And that's the problem. Indeed. Thank you so much for all your nice compliments. I want to give a shout out to our other friends, Balance of Nature, 1-800-246-8751, balanceofnature.com. I take this stuff every day, fruits and veggies, and I think it's actually made a big difference for me. I mean, I feel a clarity. I feel a healthiness that I attribute in part to Balance of Nature. I also drink lots of water and I exercise every day, but Balance of Nature has really just helped me in a way that, look, it's hard to articulate these things, but I will just tell you, I'm not the best at eating my fruits. I'm really not. I'm pretty good on vegetables. I'll eat my vegetables, but I'm not like, if I'm going to have a sweet, like I want to go all in and have the chocolate cake with the fudge and the frosting and the whole thing, right? So I'm not going to like reach for the bowl of strawberries or grapes or peaches, which I should, but I don't. And so I feel like, especially during those times of years where you don't have enough sun, and we're getting a little bit more sun right now, but if I don't get enough sort of outdoor activity, then I'm at risk of having really low vitamin D. And that comes with a whole other set of consequences. So I'm so thankful for these guys because they send me their stuff every single month. Balance of Nature. You can get it too. I can get you 35% off. Use discount code Trish plus additional $10 off plus free shipping. I don't think you can beat that anywhere. So check them out. Balanceofnature.com. All right. We got to talk VP. We haven't talked VP today. Apparently, according to Bloomberg, Donald Trump is auditioning his VP picks this weekend in Palm Beach. Well, every weekend, every day. He's inviting them all in, and they're all chit-chatting and talking. You know, a lot of these people actually do have a clue on the economy. Maybe not Marco, but Vance, for sure. For sure. A few other names that have been flown sort of around. It's really smart people. I would say the good news is for the Republican Party, they get a really, really deep bench, and they should be quite proud of that. Now, This particular article, I think, was meant to be a little bit snarky, shall we say. I don't think Bloomberg likes Donald Trump very much. In fact, I know he doesn't like Donald Trump very much. In fact, I know this because he told me. I used to work at Bloomberg, and I remember when Donald Trump opened the post office. Remember when he bought what's now, actually didn't open, he bought the post office, and he was going to open a hotel, which he did, on Pennsylvania Avenue. So it was a big deal. He bought the old post office and the media was all there and everybody wanted to, interview him, et cetera. And I was part of the media that went down there to cover that. And he agreed to my interview first. So I got to like cut the line, cut all the, CNN, MSNBC, Fox, even like it was Trish from Bloomberg of all places. But he said something really interesting to me and I haven't forgotten this. And so when I see sort of snarky articles over on Bloomberg, I always think about this. He said, Trish, make sure, promise me, you're going to tell your boss I said hi, right? Tell Mike I said hi. You promise? I was like, yeah, I'll definitely know. I mean, he might have told me like five times. So at the end of the interview, please tell your boss I said hi. And so I get back and I see the boss the next day. He had a desk like right by us in the newsroom. And we're talking. I said, just so you know, Donald Trump says hi. And he let out a whole bunch of four-letter words. he didn't like him even way back then, long before he ever ran for president. Think about that. Kind of interesting, right? Of course, Mike had maybe still does, I don't know, presidential ambitions himself. And I think Trump just kind of, you know, like he wanted to have friends in high places. And he said, you know, just tell him I said hi. And then I'm like, why am I getting hit? I'm just the messenger. He just says hi. And Mike's like, rawr, 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 rawr. So I got an earful. He does not like Donald Trump very much. And so when you see articles in Bloomberg, remember that story. Vance, Rubio, Burgum, Scott, among leading contenders. I can tell you what my intel is. My intel is that J.D. Vance may be the guy. And I think that would be a good thing. I mean, as I've said, it's a very deep bench and a lot of talented people. A lot of talented people. But J.D. Vance, I'm hearing, might be the guy. Now, the reason that's a good thing is he understands the economy. Ha ha. Imagine that, right? Like, he actually understands the economy. He's worked in business, very successful, venture capitalist. And he also understands what everyday Americans are up against. He grew up in Appalachia. I mean, he wrote a very famous book about this. It's what really launched him and launched his political career. And the values that he grew up with, he sees getting passed by. And they're frankly the values that have made this country the success it is. Family, patriotism, looking out for your neighbor, community, religion. This is what has helped define America. When you lose that, what do you have? Well, apparently you don't even have capitalism. You have a state in charge, a state making all the rules, a state that wants to be the family. That's never going to work. It's been tried all over the world multiple times. It's never worked. Whether you like it or not, you know what, human beings, we're not as altruistic as you think. We do have a lot of... That's Alexa talking to the kids. Did you guys hear that? It'll be time for bed. Means I better hurry up. But right in the middle of a really good speech. But I'm not... You know what? Family, kids, bedtime for them. These are things that matter. And these are things that make us who we are. And the values that are part of Middle America are so important. And you can't lose those. You can't look down on those. You can't scoff at those. You've got to find a way to help all Americans, to the rising tide, right? I look back to the Trump era, and I look at those numbers. You see median income having grown the most it had grown in 50 years. Actually, the wealthy didn't do as well. They didn't. And by the way, they did get taxed, especially in places like New York and California. And so the left tries to advance this narrative that somehow Donald Trump's only looking out for the wealthy. And I'm like, well, I mean, you look at the numbers, guys. Right up until March 2020, you saw the biggest median income growth that this country had ever experienced in some 50 years. And it's because policy does matter and good policy works. He brought back a lot of capital that was offshore. He stopped all those shotgun marriage deals where, you know, some big company in the U.S. would buy some little company over in Ireland. Nothing against Ireland. I love Ireland. But they're smart, right? They have the right economic policy. So they buy some, you know, and then they get the benefit of that tax bracket. And then all that money stays over there. And Trump said, no, we're going to bring it back. We're going to bring it home. Like, let's bring it home. Let's have money here. Let's build our future. Instead of constantly trying to penalize. But again, when you get the social workers in charge of the economy in the White House, you get what you get. So increasingly, a lot of the smart money's on J.D. Vance. I mean, we'll see. I think, you know, we'll be happy with the pick, whoever it is. But I love seeing smart people that understand our economy and understand business in that mix. Right? Don't you? Anyway, let me just check some of your commentary before I... This is great. So we have so many people watching right now, and it's just fantastic. So make sure I'm going to put the little subscribe thing up for you. Make sure you subscribe, that you like, et cetera. It's so important. I see we do not have a lot of Star Wars fans here in the crowd, and I get it. I get it. Look, thank you, David. Very, very, I appreciate those kind comments. Abel, good to see you again here. Mike as well. Like I said, we have so many familiar faces. Alphonse is back in the house. I like it. Yeah, Vance's memory, it is terrific. And Alphonse, he reaches out to me now and then on Twitter, and we have a nice conversation going. You guys should follow him, Alphonse Luis Vien, over on Twitter. Anyway, so great, again, to see you all. We got a big weekend coming up. I got to go put the kids to bed, et cetera. I hope you have a wonderful one, and I will see you right back here on Monday and over the weekend. We got some stuff coming your way. Thanks.